This is the Negative Splits Podcast.
Welcome to the Negative Splits Podcast. My name is Bill, and I am joined today by Andrew Polizzi, and we are here for a special edition of the show. We're calling it Power 101. We hope to bring some clarity to an exciting new means of training. Let's start the show by giving our own definition of power. Andrew, thanks for coming on today. Let's start with your interpretation of power.
That has probably been the hardest thing for me to do, is try to explain to all the people that I speak to about my training and running and my hobby. I always would say, well, I run by power. Like, well, what's that? And I could spend like 5 minutes trying to explain it to them. And sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't. So I finally came up with this interpretation of power, and hopefully it explains it and makes it easier for people to understand. So for me, the definition is the measurement of how much work you're doing and how fast you're doing it, but it's displayed in watts. So one of the coolest things about running with power, it's that it's an objective measurement of your effort. And I think it's better than training by pace, and certainly better than heart rate. I mean, what do you normally say, Bill? Like, what's your definition?
Funny story for you. My brother asked the same question a few weeks ago, and I was stumped. I was actually kind of embarrassed because I didn't have anything on the spot to explain it in a way that would, that wouldn't get too technical and that people can make sense of it. But without thinking about it, I just couldn't easily do that. So a stride is a device that gives you real-time feedback and a measurement of output while running. That output is measured in watts, like you said, and referred to as power. And stride, is, of course, is the foot pod you put on your shoe. We'll talk about that more later, the logistics of it. But just like many runners use heart rate as a number to train by, power is the same thing to me in terms of following a number and having your zone set and so on. But the two approaches are really different because of how heart rate is affected by so many different variables. But that's another discussion. We'll get into that later. After we have our special guest on today, Andrew and I will discuss a few more things about training with power. So stay tuned for that. I mean, I got a few stories I want to tell you guys, and I want Andrew to tell about his background with running with power. He's made remarkable progress. You'll want to stay tuned for that. And actually, what he sent me today about today's interval workout was really exciting for me to see a certain metric. And hopefully Coach touches on that, and it'll be a little clearer when you hear about it by then.
Should be awesome.
We are joined now by a former 216 marathoner, 1980 Olympic trials qualifier, who has 30 years plus as a medical professional and 15 years of training and racing with a power meter. He is a power running coach to elite, sub-elite, and age groupers like Andrew and myself, and one of the leading experts in running with power. His name is Steve Palladino. Thanks for coming on with us, Coach.
Well, hey, it's my pleasure. It's great being able to have the opportunity to talk with you guys.
Was that 216? This is Andrew here, Steve. Was that 216? Was that in Boston, right?
Yeah, that was Boston in 1979, ages ago. Yeah, it was a good day. I mean, Bill Rogers set American record that day. He won. And I think Joan Benoit won.
Okay.
That day. I'm pretty sure she did that day as well.
That's awesome.
All right, so we've given our definition of power before we came on here with you. We'd love to hear yours. So if someone new to the idea of power asks you for the first time, what is power? How would you respond?
Well, the dry answer is, power is work per unit time. So it's the amount of work you do in a specified period of time. But the probably the better answer is that it is power represents the work you're doing per unit of time as the closest measure of what's going on metabolically in your muscles and what's producing this output. So it's the closest thing to marking what's going on to as an output, which really differentiates it from things like heart rate, which is a response to that metabolic demand for the output, and to pace, which is going to be variable. Pace is sensitive to terrain and other things as well. So it's probably the best measure of what's going on, what the metabolic workings are. So that's the beauty of power, I think.
Well, I think you taught us well, because I think me and Bill both kind of covered that a little bit in our definitions, but you obviously stated a little bit better.
Cool.
For sure. Coach, what drew you to coaching with power as opposed to the conventional methods like pace and heart rate?
Well, you know, I did coach by conventional stuff over the years. But what really was a trigger was that I had been training for cycling and cycling racing for, you know, going back to 2002, 2003 with power. So I'd been, you know, working with power myself and even coaching a little bit by power. And it wasn't until 2 years ago Stride came out with the first running power meter. And to me, having already worked with power for all those years and knowing the advantages that it provides, it all of a sudden power, you know, is suddenly offered to runners. And I'm going, well, there it is. It makes sense to me, knowing what I knew about power, that it's, you know, jump right in for the runners. It just has a lot to offer.
Let's discuss the biggest benefits of training with power. In your opinion, what are the few really big benefits of training with power?
Well, I think there's three. I mean, one is a power duration curve. Every runner has their own specific. Everybody's looks similar, mm-hmm. but there's differences from individual to individual. So number one is that by running with power, you get a sort of an individual signature, and you can prescribe training, and you can analyze results based on that power duration curve. So that's one. The second is performance manager chart, where you are evaluating training load over time using both volume and intensity, where power allows you or at least running with a power meter allows you to capture both of those elements, not just volume like miles traditionally, but also the intensity with which those miles were run. So when you get both of those elements, you get a truer tracking of training load. And that would be a second big advantage. Mm-hmm. And the last one is that power allows you to prescribe training specifically, and even more importantly, allows the runner to execute that prescription outside of the track. So you don't have to be tied to the track to execute a very precise workout. You don't have to go and say, oh, I'm going to run 6 times 800 with 3 minutes rest. No, you prescribe it as three minutes or 2 minutes and 30s, whatever, 6 times 230. And then the runner can go do it on a trail. They could do it on a bike path. They could do it on the road. It frees the runner up to execute the workout wherever they'd like. And also one step further allows them to execute it in race specific environments. So if you're racing cross country, you can take that workout and do it on trail and cross country type courses. So that's the beauty of power. It frees the runner from the track while maintaining the specificity, the real specific prescriptions that you would get if you were training the person on the track solely.
And you mentioned the power duration curve. So maybe the first two fall under this, but it sounds like data analysis is a big advantage with running with power. And it seems like another big thing we didn't touch on yet is pacing too. whether you're going uphill or power helps simplify that. And just in general, pacing in a race, if you want to, if you have a coach that's, you know, prescribed you, I guess, a race intensity or a race pace, it's easier to follow, I feel, at least when you're following a power number. But would you agree that also kind of takes the guesswork out of training because you're able to finely tune your training zones?
Yeah. I agree 100%. And like I was saying, because it's sort of giving you an indicator of what's going on metabolically. It's the closest marker we have to what's going on internally. Mm-hmm. As an output. And so when we prescribe training, we want to create these adaptations, so we want to be as targeted as possible. So going back to the pacing, quote-unquote pacing, these pacing traditionally is referring to time, but we're talking about it in power terms. If I had a runner that's doing tempo work on the track or on a flat terrain, and I said, okay, I want 2 times 15 minutes at 300 watts. I could also send them to a long hill in the area if they happen to have one like that and say, I want you to do 2 times 15 minutes on that hill at 300 watts. It's the same metabolic. It's the same stimulus, and you'll probably get very, very similar metabolic adaptations between those two workouts. Even though if you're running off of a clock, your pace, your time pace is going to be way slower up the hill than on the flats. So that the power allows you to come back and be really targeted in terms of what kind of stimulus I want to achieve from this given workout.
Now, we talked a little bit about running effectiveness, but for the new people out there, and even when people get Stride, there's nothing on the power center. You know, there's only form power, leg spring stiffness, cadence, vertical oscillation, and leg spring stiffness, but no running effectiveness. I know how important it is because obviously you coach us and we learned a lot from you, but what would you say, and we can get into the details about each one, and I don't want to go through all of them, but what would you say maybe are the top metrics that one can track or monitor to improve performance? With running with power, for example, running effectiveness.
Okay, well, I would put running effectiveness as number two. The obvious number one is power, and by relationship to that power to weight ratio, that would be number one. And then running effectiveness would be my second. I think running effectiveness, it's unfortunate. It's not on Power Center, it's not on Garmin Connect, it's not on Final Search. I don't think it's on Training Peaks.
Nope.
So you have
it's
to track
not,
it yourself, no. Or you know, I use WKO4, so I'm able to track it, and I think it's an important metric. And just for the listeners, what it is it's basically the ratio of speed to power. Speed divided by power, and the speed is in meters per second, the power is in watts per kilogram. But ultimately, it's telling you how effective someone is at producing speed from their power. And it varies. Some people are very effective. You can imagine, you know, a elite Kenyan runner might be, you know, very effective, and their running effectiveness might be 1.05, just to throw a number out there.
Mm-hmm.
So very effective, where you know, an average runner might be 0.99, somewhere in that range. So you can have two runners that are can produce the same amount of power at, say, for a 5K race. Let's say they're equal in close to equal, let's say 15, 16, 17 minute 5K racers, and they can produce relatively the same power. But the one with the higher running effectiveness is going to get more speed from that power. So it just makes absolute sense. Since ultimately what we're trying to do is go faster, it makes some sense to try to relate power to speed. And that running effectiveness allows us to relate that for a given runner or across runners.
Okay. Now, how about leg spring stiffness? I know that's available in Power Center, but obviously looking at it as a raw number, is not how we should be comparing it or looking at it. It's, I know from what you explained to us, it's LSS slash kilograms or weight.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. If you have a big person, a heavier mass person, you're always going to have a bigger raw number than a petite person. And it's to compare people and compare the relative values. It's best to divide that raw number by kilograms. And leg spring stiffness is another one of my top five metrics that I follow. For the listeners, what it is it is the elastic. Think of it as the elastic recoil component of our stride. If we come down, we load our soft tissues, tendons, fascia, ligaments, etc. And it's not, when we're pushing off, it's not just muscular push. We're getting some elastic recoil of those tissues, a small amount of propulsion. That's simply elastic recoil. So leg spring stiffness represents to me free speed. It doesn't cost any oxygen. Whereas that, all that muscular power, that's costing you oxygen. Where the higher your leg spring, the more recoil effectively you get for zero oxygen cost. So that's why I think it's an important metric to follow.
All right. We haven't touched on critical power yet. And this is an important one. Why is obtaining critical power, or otherwise known as FTP, so important?
Well, it represents a physiologic state that's equivalent to maximal lactate steady state. So basically the highest lactate you're able to tolerate on a quasi steady state without it ramping up. So you're right there on the edge. So that's an important thing in running. It turns out that between 5K and marathon racing, between those two extremes, it is executed at functional threshold power plus or minus 10%. So 5K is generally executed somewhere 106 to 110% of functional threshold power. And on the other end, marathons usually executed somewhere between 88-92%, probably higher for elites. But you can see that all of this running that we typically do from 5K to marathon all falls into this zone that's pretty proximate to critical power or functional threshold power, which we can use those terms interchangeably. So it's important. It's an important thing. We do most of our racing, and for that matter, probably the majority of our training is done relative to functional threshold power.
I mean, once you get that number, you could plug in your using Steve's. He's got the Power Paladino zones. Did I get that right, Andrew?
Yes, the Steve Paladino power zones, right?
Yeah, that's close enough.
Once you get those bad boys set, you're set to go. I think, there's a little bit of a learning curve here, especially for someone just buying the stride. And we actually got to know each other through a chat on Facebook. And we invite people in every now and then, and they get a stride power meter, and they always ask, how do I begin? And I think you need to establish that critical power number, and that could be done through a short race or through a critical power test. Stride has its own protocol. There's many different ways to get it, but just like Steve said, though, it's important to establish that early.
There's nuances to getting it, but once you get that, then you really honed in terms of your training targets, and for that matter, it extends even to racing targets. Mm-hmm. Because they're fairly predictable off of that, within that range of 5K to marathon. Once you get to outside of that range, then you get into different things, and you have to look at the person's fatigue resistance on the far right past marathon, and you have to look at their power duration curve to the left of 5K, which is, higher anaerobic component.
Now, we always refer, like you said, everybody to the Paladina power zones. And I know Jim Vance had power zones. I know Stride Power Center has the power zones when you first get set up. And that's what I was looking at. But then once I found your zones, I was like, well, this makes so much more sense. And now knowing your zones and looking at the intensities and how you subscribe the super threshold workouts, the near threshold workouts, and then once in a while, the 1 minute durations at the 5K effort. And then I look at the Stride Power Centers. And even today I calculated the zone five, where you would do some of what the workout you assigned to us, but it goes all the way up to 146 or something percent of the CP number. And I'm like, if somebody comes in there and tries to do one of those intervals at say a minute or 2 minutes at 146%, that's going to be a killer. And so then I look at your zones. I'm like, so why are we so different? Or, I mean, yours, obviously I'm biased, but why did you create them? Because of those reasons, or?
They have some physiologic basis, and they're very similar to zones that were put out ages ago by Dr. Coggan, Andrew Coggan. They're similar in some respects, but also different. So there is some physiologic basis to it. But what I added is I had the fortune of having a lot of runners that had run different race distances. And so I was able to sort of see where those percentages usually lie. So I mentioned earlier, the 5K is usually done at about 106 to 110%. And a 1600 is somewhere maybe 115 to 120%. Marathon, usually 88 to 92%. So as you start learning where these ranges for different races are, and you go back to the old convention of everything's based off of race pace, right?
Right.
In terms of pacing. Well, now I know what powers people execute races at. And I also know what physiology is behind those particular powers and those races. So it allows me to sort of group them into zones. And so you'll look at it, and my zone 3A starts at 88%, which is probably, the bottom end of marathon power. And then it goes all the way up to 100, 101%, which is where people usually will execute 15K, the half marathon if they're elite, but 10K for the average person. And in between is half marathon, somewhere around 95%. So you can see these demarcations occur quite a bit at these race zones translate into the zones that I created. You look at zone five. You mentioned zone five. That's your max aerobic power. That's VO2 max, stuff that's going to allow you to tap into VO2 max. The bottom end of that is what, 105, 106%,
right?
Which I think 106. So that coincides fairly well with the bottom end of where most people execute 5Ks at. 5Ks are often pretty close. They run a little bit under what someone's VO2 max is. So VO2 max is a little higher power than the 5K power for most people. For elites, it might be really close to their VO2 max power. So the beginning of five is VO2 max 5K, and it goes up to mile. And once you get above mile, that's purely anaerobic power. That's, getting to six. And that's that 146. You'll see some zones. The 146 is still in the max aerobic power. No.
Right.
Try
right.
It someday.
Exactly.
No, that's anaerobic. You may be able to do that for a 400 or maybe a 300 going
right.
Really hard. Yeah.
Right.
So what I tried to do is have a physiologic rationale for these zones as well as race power rationale. So they tend to fit in pretty well with those.
I love them. I think they're perfect. It just, and for my last 5K that
I ran, and we can look, but I think I was right at 110%. It was right in there. So, and that obviously has to be based on an accurate CP number. So obviously it was right there. So that was awesome.
Pretty close. Yeah. Now I do want to say one thing about that. And so when we're training by zones, you know, really the whole idea of the zones originally was to describe, you know, hey, I'm training here, which is this zone 3A. That's, you know, I'm trying to develop lactate threshold but doing it very extensively, long workouts. So it's more descriptive. When you start training by zones, realize that once you get up there in zone 4, 5, 6 in particular, it's variable. Some people have a big anaerobic engine and some people have a little tiny one, you know, it's
like
turbocharged versus, you know, the two cylinder engine.
That would be Bill, right? With the two cylinder.
that's between you guys. As a coach, I have confidentiality.
Yeah, I got you. We got
specifics.
So
the thing is that as you get into those higher zones, it's probably better to pick from your personal power duration curve, and you can probably be a little bit better targeted than just, you know, taking those zones as gospel.
Let me ask you about the benefits of racing with power.
Racing with power allows you to pace, again in quotes, by having a sort of I call it iso power. You're trying to maintain the same power throughout the race. Mm-hmm. It keeps people, one of the big mistakes is going out too hard. People say, hey, I traditionally go out too hard. Well, by having real-time power on your wrist, you know, hey, I probably, and I do this with my athletes, I go, you probably can hold X power to Y power for this race and give them maybe a 3-watt range or something like that, pretty tight range. You should be able to hold this. And if you're going out and you're going 10 watts over the target and you're in the first mile, no, that's not going to end too well. Unless you're just going, no, I feel like there's no gravity today and I can do this forever. Sometimes there are those special days. But usually power allows you to pace honestly, regardless of whether you're on a rolling course where, you know, you have a few uphills. So you still have your power target. And on the downhill, you still have a power target. I'll modify that a little bit. For example, on uphill, I'll allow people to overpower by a couple percent. On the downside, it's really hard to hold target power downhill, so I'll allow them to be a few watts shy of target power on the downhill, and it works out pretty good pacing-wise. As a coach, the other thing, this last cross-country season was great with the high scorers that I coach. I'm able to compare performances across different courses, regardless of the terrain. You'll have a flat 5K course. You'll have a hilly 5K course. You get two different times. How do they perform? How do they perform one course relative to the other? You look at power. Mm-hmm. You know, in one course, they ran 290 watts, and then 3 weeks later, they ran, you know, 305 watts, yeah, that race is way better, even though it was slower because it was on a hillier course. You know, and you wouldn't know that. Of course, you could see how they perform relative to other athletes, but this is more finite. I knew this runner had a great race simply by looking at their power. So that's another thing in terms of racing. From a coaching standpoint, it allows me to look at similar duration events. You can't really compare a 10 mile to a 5K, but you can compare 5Ks from various courses and be able to rate them in terms of performance, regardless of the terrain.
Okay. Last question, Coach. I know we've had on here about, you know, a little longer than we wanted to. I want to keep you up too late tonight. Well, actually, you're on the left coast, so we are on the right coast. So maybe we're up a little later. We do have to work out in the morning. What would you say, and what would your recommendations be for someone who's just starting out with power?
There's a few things. One, you just run with it. Don't try to look at it and really get a deep understanding. You look at a tracing and it's a bunch of squiggles and you go, what does that mean? Look at when you start, just run with it. Look at averages. If you're looking at anything, look at your average for a segment rather than all the squiggles. Do that for a few weeks to even a month and sort of get a feel. Run some of your traditional workouts. You know, say, hey, my easy day, I'm just going to run my easy day pace. I'm going to see what the average power is for that. So you do that for a while. You get in the hang of you know, getting your watch set up and the power set up and just getting it done. Then you want to get, like you guys, you want to get a CP test or threshold test so you actually can start establishing training zones. Once you do that, then you can go back and compare what you got a feel for in that first couple of weeks, a month, to what you're seeing on your power zones. And then the last thing, as you're starting out, it's a natural tendency. We are working from a language of heart rate or pace when runners are coming over to power.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're fluent in. And they want to start translating one into the other, and it's very challenging for them. I would say don't try to do that. Try to take power for power. Once you have your threshold established, run by power, train by power. And sometimes you can make the translations, but it is a time suck. And it's a frustration when you try to make those translations from heart rate to power or pace to power. It's easier just run by power.
I agree 100% with all that, including the just collect data part for a few weeks. And we've had a few people approach us recently, and that's the first thing we tell them is, hey, just collect data for a few weeks, get used to how power feels for different intensities. And then you can look into taking that CP test. But there's a lot of avenues to learn about power out there. It's growing, finally. There's a lot of great literature out there. And you're one of the authors of such great literature. And, you know, that could be seen if you join Steve's Facebook group, the Paladino Power Project. And he also has, I'm very excited about this, webinar coming up this Monday. About WKO4. That's the software he uses to basically analyze all of our data and where he can, fine tune our training program. And we're excited to learn more about that. That's going to be in the little bit more of the advanced class. This is just Power 101. We wanted to wanted to cover the basics here with Coach, but we do appreciate you giving us your time today, and we hope to have you on again soon, Steve.
Thank you. That was great.
Thank you, Coach.
All right, we are back. And now if you're feeling a little overwhelmed from hearing all that, do not worry. It is a little bit of a learning curve, but that's what we're here for, just to help make it a little bit easier, the process. Just to give you a little background, Andrew and I started off in this Facebook chat. We were invited by Shan. Thank you, Shan, for this. We both had Stride, and all of a sudden, you know, we're all asking questions, sharing information, and then a few new people come along, and Steve Paladino is one of them, and we're, you know, he's given us these really technical answers, and I just think that's when we realized, man, if we're gonna train with this device, then we gotta use this dude as our coach, because he knows what he's talking about. And there was some others, you know, giving some good information there, like Chris Haig. But that's how Andrew and I basically found him as a coach. Andrew, you've made remarkable progress in just a matter of, less than 2 months. I've been, I mean, we talk often, but I'm always astonished about, you know, the workouts you nail and the times you're putting up, and you got a race coming up soon, 5K. And let's talk about where you were just before you started working with Steve.
I bought a Stride power meter right in the beginning of September. As you said, I saw him on Strava talking about this power, and I was like, what are you talking about? And he briefly explained it to me, added me to the Facebook Messenger chat group Power. And as you said, that's when we started asking questions and learning from Steve. I started running again in March of 2017 after a long layoff, and my all-time PR was 19:44. That was 9 years ago. So when I started running, I wanted to break 20 in a 5K again. So over the summer, I was just training with just a prefabricated plan that I just purchased off the internet. You know, you run by this pace and you do these workouts and things like that. And I was doing that. And over the summer, I was right about mid high 21 5Ks. And then my best time was on August 20th. It was 20:39. And the target race that I was looking to break 20 was October 29th. It's called the Sea Witch 5K. It's a Halloween 5K. That was the same race I hit 19:44 9 years ago. So I wanted that to be the race to at least break 20, but maybe try to get 19:43. Had 2 months of hard workouts in. I did have the Stride power meter, but I was just running in with it and not really knowing what to do yet at that time. What did I end up running? 20:26, a whopping 13 seconds increase, or a 13 second improvement.
Right.
I was kind of disappointed in that result. I mean, the weather was raining. It was a little windy, but 13 second improvement, I was a little disappointed. Next day, I started working with Steve. Within 1 month of working with Steve, and actually working with the proper zones, the right workouts, at the right intensity finally, the right easy runs, which end up being a lot slower than I used to run before in the past, I raced on December 3rd. And Steve told me, hey, break 20, you need to run 321 watts. I was like, okay, 321.
Mm-hmm.
So I shoot out of the gate, and I'm like at 330, 340. I'm like, whoa, slow down, slow down. So I'm running and, you know, I'm about 330, 329. I'm high, but I feel good. And I was like, I can hold this. I can do this. I didn't even look at the time. Didn't have pace on my watch. Nothing. I just had that power number and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I come across the last point one and there it is. Coming across that finish line at 19:13.
Damn. So the big improvement.
Quite. I mean, you know, not only did I break my all-time PR, I crushed it.
Yeah.
And I was shocked. And yes, I do have a race coming up. February 10th, I am definitely stronger. And I know I'm faster since that last race. Coach just has just these awesome, awesome workouts, three of them a week. And I'm hoping to get into, you know, I've seen a high 18s, but...
Yeah, I was going to say,
lower.
You're flirting with, you know, I mean, you're certainly on knocking on the door of breaking 19, in my opinion, but how much further down you go, you know, that'll be interesting to see, and that's coming up soon, weather permitting, of course, if weather isn't crazy, but
right.
to go from like, you know, 20 minutes and change to 18 minutes, and even if it's high, to me, that is in the short period of time too. It's, you know, it's only been not even a few months with him. Same here with me. I've done a few races. You know, I PR'd at the 8K or Thanksgiving, but my bigger goal is Buffalo Marathon coming up in May. And we just hit an important threshold. We're about to hit an important threshold, at least to me. We're about to hit 16 weeks until the big race. And For me, I've always trained, like you said, you find some program out there. You know, when you first start out, it's Hal Higdon's, you know, his are free.
Right, right.
And then as you advance, you may go on to Greg McMillan or the Hansen's method or whatever. Even if you do enough reading, you can come up with your own plan pretty easily. And I've done that for a long time, and I just felt like, you know, I plateaued and I wanted to try something different with power. And I'm excited to see where this takes me. But, you know, what's interesting is, you're kind enough. You have WKO4. I don't. And if anybody hears that, they're like, what the hell are they talking about? It's a software. And you're able to review your data pretty quick, immediately after your run. And Andrew's kind enough where I send him my files because I know you get a few extra metrics like Coach brought up that you can't get in Final Surge or Training Peaks or the Stride Power Center. And one of them is RE. And I just love to check that out because it is such an important metric. And today, you know, I did intervals. First one set of intervals outdoors in a long time because weather around here has been crappy. And so I was able to get out there, and it's just like one of my favorite things is getting that report back. Andrew sends it, and it's got every metric that's worth its weight, that's important. So it's one of the really cool things about training with power is it's the data analysis comes afterwards. If you're training with heart rate and all that stuff, really easy to get fixated on that number in the moment. I used to all the time. I knew my heart rate zone so well that it was almost, I thought it was a detriment to my training because I was constantly looking at my watch, and there's so many variables that can affect heart rate. And we plan on getting into all that. Andrew and I didn't know how far we'd dig into this episode, you know, but, you know, we're running out of time here, but we do want to announce we are going to be starting another podcast that'll be under this umbrella, and it's going to be related to power. You know, we haven't decided on an official name yet, and we've come up with some ideas, but we will definitely be in plugging that wherever you found this episode, which is on the Negative Splits feed. So we're excited to kind of talk about a lot more. There's so much more. I mean, we could bring
so
up
so much.
We could bring up, why power's worked for you. And you know, you mentioned your easy pace used to run too fast for it, right?
Way too fast. And I'll just give you a quick example. I know we got to go and end this, but the one thing that I would say for people starting out with power is, enter your recent race time if you have one, get your CP number, and then look at that easy zone. And I know Steve likes to recommend 75 to 80% of your CP number. That's your easy pace. Run that pace. And I can guarantee you, for the most part, unless you run on a track every day for your easy pace, it's going to be slower. I was running around 840s for an easy pace because that's what the calculators told you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a little bit of a hilly route that I run. After running by power, I was running like 920. I'm like, I am slow. But it really forces you to actually monitor your effort. You have to slow up going up the hills. You can't run 840 pace up the hills and consider that an easy run. I did that one time training with Coach, and he called me out on it.
I remember
that. He said, I hope you're trying to shake your legs out and not, increase the pace there because it's not really helping you with any stimulus or anything. So yeah, it's honest. You don't run up fast up the hill because your easy pace is 840 and you're at 10 going up the hill. It's going to be slower. So those calculators online, those prefabricated plans of telling you those easy paces, they're all assuming you're going to run on a flat land all the time. So that's the great thing. And, there is so much more. And, not only are we going to actually talk about all these other different metrics and how we train, talking about our training as we're going on for our goals and your BQ, but we're also going to look to answer questions from the community and, hopefully simplify this for the masses.
Exactly. And some of those basics include like configuration with your watch. I mean, how many times do you see that question on the Stride forum? There's so much confusion about, what should you set up as data screens and this and that. And it really isn't that complicated, but I think that, a little guidance can go a long way because it's, unless you know this stuff, you're going to go through the same errors that we did. But that's where we're here to help. And we're here to kind of, you know, bring a little bit more clarity to those issues. And, you know, for example, let's see here, what else, what are some of the other questions that are,
well, how do you, you're the expert in this, but how to use stride on a treadmill. So we'll definitely get into that. You know, I know there's a question today in the Negative Splits forum on, or the Facebook group of, you know, how to use it with Swift. We've recently have been doing that.
Yep.
With Swift, you know, discussing a little bit more in detail, the power metrics, the big thing, you know, get, you know, if you're going to start training with power, get rid of the pace, get rid of the heart rate, use those things for post data analysis.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing is that a lot of people are always like, well, my stride's off by this much. My stride's off about this much. Here's the thing. When you're running workouts, you're running duration. You're running 5-minute intervals. You're running 3-minute intervals. You're not worried about the distance.
Right.
You're worried about a power and you're worried about the duration. The only time where the distance will come into play is when you say, I want to do a 5-mile easy run. And who cares if you're off by 0.1 or 0.2 when it comes down to it? It's not going to make a big difference. The workouts is where it's at. You're running by duration and power. That's what causes the stimulus and then the adaptations. And you just progress from there. And it's so easy and it takes the guesswork out of it. And you don't have to worry about going to a track. You can do it right at your front door on a hill. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, definitely. And there's way, actually, there's a way to calibrate stride even further. I mean, it comes out of the box really well calibrated.
Yes.
They actually recommend you don't touch it. And I agree. But if there have been instances where some of the pods maybe have been reported to be a little bit off. So if you're counting on that for a marathon, you, first of all, you shouldn't be. But if, you know, you should always just, well, we'll talk, we'll get into that another time. But if you really want to fine tune it, you can do the old track test, and we'll talk about that in another episode. But that's down the line. This is for people. Hopefully, if you've never heard of power before and now you have an interest, you know, this is something that you can kind of dive into, tap into, and learn about. There's a little bit of a learning curve, but like Coach said, the best thing you can do if you decide to get stride, collect data and then learn, and then just, you know, listen to podcasts, sit back and watch YouTube videos on it. It's really easy, but it just takes a little repetition because it's new. This thing, we're on the ground floor of something pretty exciting, I feel like. And less people know about it, hey, unless my competition knows about it.
right.
But no, we have a blast talking about it. Honestly, we talk about it often. It's fun. It's a different world, you know, because I think it took a long time for people to get used to heart rate training. And right. That's a different world, you know, and zones and this and that. Some people, hey, listen, some people don't want to train or don't take training that seriously. This podcast, this episode, and future podcast episodes are for people who are looking for improvement. So thanks for tuning in. Andrew, thanks for joining me today on the Negative Splits podcast. We'll do this again soon. Have a good night, my friends.
Thanks for listening to the Negative Splits podcast. If you'd like to help the show, head over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating or review. If you'd like to contact the show, send us an email at negativesplitspodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter. We're the Negative Splits. And if you're on Strava, why not step up to the challenge and join the Negative Splits Podcast Club?